Hello, everyone. I want to show you a picture of the retreat house that I took today. I mean, you guys have probably seen pictures of it before, but what's different in this picture than some of the ones I took before is everything's green now. But let's see, there's the house. It's the brown house right there next to the lake. And this that little pointy thing, that's called Gimmer's Butte. And then you can see that there's still some snow-capped mountains. Not all the snow has melted high in the high altitude. So, and then there's a guy fishing right there by the rocks. But that's what it looks like here today. So, and I saw somebody made a comment during the weekly service that I don't think you guys ever get summer. And actually, this year has been unusually cool. It's been 20 degrees cooler than normal. So it's just a cold front that's just been kind of hanging out here. It's not normal, but today it's been in the mid 80s here in La Vida. So we do get a summer. And typically we have a longer summer, but, this year's different. What can we say? It's even been cool in Pueblo, and Pueblo gets into the hundreds, like 105. And we've had very cool weather there. So it's a very unusual year, but tell you what, I like the cool we've been having in Pueblo has been like the lower 70s, and it's a lot more pleasant than 105. So we're here for Gentle Healing Year 3. And I have some stuff planned to share with you. I am behind on your journals. And since tonight we're at a class point, I'll probably just start fresh tomorrow. That's just simply because I've been a little busier in the last week than usual. One of the things I've been working on is a paid time off policy. We've never had a vacation policy or a paid time off policy, but now we have four people and it's getting a little, you know, it's not real clear. So I've been working on a policy this week. And as a result of just, you know, doing a little more of that type of work, I haven't had as much time for reading the journals. So hopefully y'all will forgive me, and tomorrow I hope to start fresh. Today I sent the policy off in the mail, so it's out of my hands now onto other people so I can get back to normal. So before I get started with what I have to share, do you guys have anything that you would like to share from the last week? All right, it sounds pretty quiet, so I will go ahead and get started. By the way, if you didn't hear Sunday's weekly gathering, if you get the chance, you might want to go back and listen to that, because that was really about step two in the seven steps to awakening. Yes, Jay?
I just have a thought to share in general about, I guess, what's going on with all of the, you know, the hundreds of quotes now we've contemplated. I guess you could call it a subtle shifting. I can't put words to it. I don't know how to describe it. I guess you could say withdrawing meaning from everything, not in a bad way. I don't know how else to describe it. It's something I don't feel I'm causing. I just notice it. Like, a lot of things don't bug me as much as they used to. Like recently in the last 3, 4, or 5 weeks, a shift, a much greater awareness of when I'm coming from ego and just an immediate disengaging from it, to a level I've never been, you know, awareness of when I'm in ego in a lot of different ways I didn't notice before. I don't know if that would be normal for what is occurring here. Something's going on inside that I can't describe. It's hard to disconnecting, but not in a bad way. But it's really deep, whatever it is. It feels really deep what's occurring. So I don't know if that makes any sense to anyone, but giving up the mic.
Well, you know, we're not that far from the end of step two. And I haven't determined yet if we're going to do a review or not. I've been marking quotes as I go along that I think are really important. And what I'll do at some point is go back and look at them and see if we should do a review of any of those quotes. But in step two, there's 524 quotes. And you guys today, does anybody remember what you did? I know we're in the 400s. Does anybody remember the number of today?
464 it ended today.
464. So see, we're getting pretty close to the end of step two. And step three is going to be see how the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self and all illusion and suffering. So what we're really going to be doing in step three, Jay, is a little bit about what you've been talking about that you're already experiencing. We're going to be looking very deeply at the ego. And it sounds like, you know, you maybe are doing that a little bit, but that's what the next step is all about. See how the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self and all illusion and suffering. So we're getting close to that point. Anybody else want to share? All right, then. I'll go ahead and start my sharing, and I'm going to share my screen. I'm going to be taking you all through a little bit of my journal, a little bit of my step two journal, starting with quote 427, which really was from last week, but it kind of fits this group, so it wouldn't be appropriate to leave it out. And these are different quotes than the ones I shared in the weekly gathering on Sunday. Quote 427 says simply, "The world appearance is illusory." It's a very short quote. "The world appearance is illusory." So this is what was in my journal. "It is important to separate what is real from what is unreal. Reality can be verified through direct experience. Being is the only direct experience. Experience through observing is filtered through mind and is therefore indirect. What is directly experienced? Being, existing. This, then, is confirmed. It cannot be denied. Is this true? Yes. What of the world, which is seen, touched, heard, smelled, and tasted? Those are all means of observing. They are not being. Therefore, the world is not directly experienced. Is it known that being or existing is real? Yes, that is known beyond question. Is it known that the world is real? No, that cannot be known." So what you're seeing here are questions that that arose, you know, I would say from my inner teacher, and then my answer. A question that arose and then my answer. And what this particular quote is looking at, instead of just taking the world appearance is illusory, it's again, it's the same type of stuff I looked at in the weekly gathering. It's investigating it. And the point that I came to here, hold on, I want to see you guys again. There you are. I can only see four at a time, but that's better than none at a time. The point that I came to here was I really looked very deeply, and you guys, again, can do this with me, kind of like maybe you did in the weekly gathering on Sunday. I looked very deeply at the sense that I am, and in fact, you could even call it, I am here now. Right? I exist. And again, I asked, you know, or inner guidance asked, can this be denied that I exist? And really, you know, it would just be idiotic to deny that I exist. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Does this existence, meaning just the I exist feeling, does this feel real? And I would have to say that when I pay attention to it, it is by far the most real thing I know. Right? You know, I could hold up, what do I have around me here? I could hold up this pillow. And, you know, I can touch the pillow and I can describe what the pillow feels like. Maybe I can smell the pillow, not really, let's pretend like I can. Describe what the pillow smells like. I can say what it feels like, looks like, my opinion of the pillow. But I am not being the pillow. I'm merely observing the pillow. And so in that way, compared to being, all of the information about the pillow is more second hand. And not only that, it's opinion, because I could have one idea about this pillow and Jay, for example, could have another idea about the pillow, right? So what happened through this inquiry and through this looking is that at the very least, I was able to see that there was a certainty that I exist, a certainty of existence, and everything in the world at best is interpreted. And I could see the difference, which one of those is primary when you're using the word reality. Obviously, what is definite, my existence, is more primary or more real than something I observe and interpret. And in fact, as another example, talking about Dr. Jeffrey Martin's data, if we wanted to get in a big circle and all of us read his book and all of us listen to the satsang and then discuss Dr. Jeffrey Martin's data, even with him in the room discussing it with us, we could have a variety of opinions about his data because it came through observation. But if we look at ourselves and look at our existence, there's nothing to interpret there. Right? It's a fact beyond interpretation. So at the very least, there's a clarity that there's more certainty of the reality of beingness than there is of what, I'll say of, at least of what the world is. Because that's interpretive observed data or information. So I'll pause for a moment and see if anybody has anything they want to say. Again, I can only see Jay and Shauna and myself. So if anybody else wants to speak, please just speak up.
Just a thought that these are perceptions based on conditioning, which I didn't always see perceptions based on conditioning so clearly as I have in the, as now with all these hundreds of quotes about releasing conditioning. But I'm realizing the conditioning is the elephant in the room that is driving Jay McCormick to see Dr. Jeffrey Martin's research a certain way, yes. You know, Shauna to see it a certain way, Rhonda, well, no, Jay, I this is the way I see it, you know, whatever it is, it's the conditioning that is just totally false. And I didn't see that before so clearly like I do now. It's really all it is.
Yeah, and you could argue there are no facts there. There are no facts in anything observed. The only true fact is that I exist, this isness, right? Everything else is interpretation. So if it's interpretation, do we call it real? What does that word real mean? You know, it's just something to contemplate. So that was 427. Next, I'm going to move us to 438. Probably the best way to get there is this way. Let me read 438 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Oh, it's another really long one. The world appearance is like a dream. That's the quote. The world appearance is like a dream. So let's look and see how I investigated that quote. Look how much I wrote about the world appearance is like a dream. What makes the body world? Oh, I think I did cover this one on Sunday, so this one will be a review. What makes the body world experience seem real when compared to a nighttime dream, which is known to be unreal? And I said, what makes the body world seem real compared to a nighttime dream is that in the nighttime dream, I wake up. I wake up from a dream. It doesn't last. It's temporary. It also doesn't make sense. It doesn't follow consistent physical laws. Remember, this is when I told the story about the dime. And in fact, I think I probably won't go through all of this because we did this on Sunday. And so if you haven't heard the weekly gathering, you can go back and listen to this. But what I'm reminded of right now when I look at it doesn't follow consistent laws. as Paul Harvey would say, I have the rest of the story to tell about the dime. As you guys know, the story that I told on Sunday was that when I was, you know, around May 10th, 2012, when I was contemplating this, and I was contemplating, does the world follow consistent laws, or is it just a nighttime dream that doesn't? And I had had a dime that I had found somewhere on the floor or somewhere, and I had picked it up and I had put it on this table upstairs. And a couple days later, I was walking by and I looked at the table and I noticed that the dime was gone. I just kind of thought, huh, you know, I figured Danielle or Jasmine took it, you know, but I didn't think much of it, but I did notice it was gone. The next morning, which would be May 10th, 2012, while I was downstairs writing this particular contemplation about is the world like a dream or not, or does the world have consistent laws and therefore it's different from a dream, I'm sitting there contemplating this, I'm writing this, and I get down to this point. Let's see, where is it? Does the world always follow consistent physical laws? And while I'm looking at that question, before I write the answer, I hear this noise on the table next to me, and I look, and there's the dime. It had just, the noise was like it had fallen from the sky, you know, or fallen from the ceiling, and there's the dime. And it's almost like, because the table was upstairs, it's almost like that dime somehow disappeared and then fell through the ceiling and landed right next to me. And I could not explain it at all. And so that's why I wrote, I cannot say that the world always follows consistent physical laws, because right while I'm contemplating that, something happened that I genuinely could not explain. Well, the rest of that story is, when I was telling the story on Sunday, I tapped my desk in a particular spot. You know, like the dime was like right here, fell right here, and I tapped my desk. On Monday morning, I went to empty the trash under my desk, and directly underneath where I tapped it while telling that story, laying on the floor was a dime. And I have no idea where that dime came from. I just have no, I mean, I, you know, I take the trash out every week. There hasn't been a dime there before. I don't even take my purse downstairs. I have no idea where that dime came from. Again, I really cannot explain it. So the point here is, if we believe the world follows consistent physical laws, that is literally just an interpretation. That is just a point of view. And if we began to really look and see if that's true, that's not true. In fact, I have another piece of proof that I carry around on my phone. Some of you guys have seen this. This is a picture that I took myself. It is unaltered. And I don't know if it will work here. Let's see. If you look right there, that is a picture of a ghost. Can you see his eyes, his teeth, his nose, his eyebrows? Can you see him? I took that picture. Now, prior to taking this picture, I might have said, I'm not sure there's such a thing as ghosts. Right? And certainly to some people, there's no such thing as ghosts. This ghost opened the door for, you know, I was outside of the hallway in a hotel. This ghost opened the door and invited me to come into the room. I did not go into the room, but I did take a picture of the ghost. You know, I have a friend, and I don't know whether she's crazy or not, but I have a friend who seems perfectly sane. I swear to you, she seems perfectly sane. She's a Buddhist nun. She claims that she was, when she was younger, like a young, like maybe 12, 13-ish, that she was kidnapped by aliens multiple times during the night, and they would do experiments on her and return her to her bed. You know, I mean, that sounds crazy to me, but she seems like a perfectly sane woman. So again, maybe this is a dream. You know, I mean, I can't say for certain this is a dream. But if you really look, it's also difficult to say that the world always follows consistent physical laws. It doesn't appear to completely be true, does it? So these types of contemplations can really help us open our mind in a genuine way, that maybe the world is a dream. I don't know that these types of contemplations confirm it, but they open our minds in a different way when we really stop and look. I'm going to pause again and see if anybody has anything to share before I continue.
Yeah, hey, Regina, it's Ron.
Hi, Ron.
It reminded me when going through some of these different contemplations of a TED talk that I had seen by a neuroscientist by the name of Jill Bolt, B-O-L-T-E. And I'm going to post the link. She was worked at Harvard and, you know, clearly understood all the different aspects of the brain, how the left and right hemisphere work together. And she all of a sudden found herself going through a stroke, and she knew what was going on. And she was kind of curious, a neuroscientist actually being able to slowly experience and kind of note what was taking place. But at a point where her left hemisphere almost totally shut down, she experienced almost how you describe your experience with the apple and just things kind of all merging together. And, you know, who knows, maybe it's the way that our human brain left right hemisphere is set up that deciphers the world and interprets the world in the way that it does. We don't know how a dog sees the world. We don't know how other creatures see the world. And having people who, you know, come from that kind of background, experience something like this that's so close to what other spiritual people have described in some of their experiences, just again makes me think that how can we really know what is real to some degree.
Well, and don't correct me if I'm wrong, Ron, but don't scientists say that seeing actually occurs in the brain?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the light that is picked up by the eye, everything's actually upside down, and the receptors that are there can't interpret a thing. Not at all. Everything, all that the image ends up in the brain, and then it puts meaning to what it thinks those different light sensors mean.
Yeah. So absolutely. Really, then the programming in the brain would define what we see rather than the world defining.
That's our human conditioning. But along with, you know, I'm starting to think though too that there's a biological element here.
Yes.
Above and beyond just the human conditioning, that we're kind of almost set up in a way to experience life this way unless we transcend.
And I've been listening to Bernadette Roberts today, and that's exactly what she said. That's exactly what she said, what you just now said. Yes, Jay.
On Ron's note, what he's implying is that to awaken, we have to overcome what we could call a biological imperative, which is what I hear him describing and what Bernadette mentioned, which is not a way of the world thing. The way of the world would be to just continue to interpret what you see according to the programming of the mind and live out your whole life and be happy, quote unquote. That's all that anyone would ever be in the ways of the world ever expected to experience. What we're doing is actually counter to the biological imperative. So it's almost like we're hardwired not to awaken.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you think about it though, I mean, if we go through what I heard Bernadette say this morning, which I know you guys weren't with me when I was listening, but she talked about how, you know, there were the elements, and she also talked about how evolution's not exactly the right word, but I'm not going to go into that. I'm going to go ahead and just stick with evolution. How the elements, evolved into these single cell creatures, which and evolved into plants, and then there was an evolution into more complicated animals and more complicated plants, and eventually there's evolution into the human. And of course, she gives the creative principle credit for all of that this is the creative principle really doing all of this. But she says when the next evolution to human came, you know, it created this certain biology and this certain brain so that we have this certain experience, but the next evolutionary step is the merger with the divine. In other words, it's a going forward. So everything you just said, except for the fact that she doesn't see it as we're hardwired not to awaken, she sees that as the next natural evolution. right? That's in the, and then going beyond the unitive state is what comes even after that. And if you think about it, like I think about it, I mean, if you think just like me, and I recognize you may not, that's quite exciting to reach for that next, you know, evolutionary rung on the ladder, right? If you know that we were put here, you know, through the creative principle to have that capability to take that next step, that's pretty exciting. And of course, most people won't. We know that. But, you know, in her interpretation, we're the ones with that ability. And that's not an accident. And it's natural for things to move forward. So I'll just leave that with everyone to contemplate. And let me look and see what I wanted to look at next. The next thing I want to look at then is 441. Okay, so 441, let's look at the quote. What appears to be the world is the expansion of one's own notions or thoughts. So this is my contemplation of that. So again, this is still happening where my inner guidance is asking me questions and I'm answering. So where does a nighttime dream come from? The mind, right? How is this known? I can say something I am unsure of and see something on TV, and the two become mixed up with one another and create a bizarre dream. That which was in the mind shows up in the dream. In other words, and I probably just had this experience, I probably said something the day before that I wasn't sure about, therefore I kept thinking about it, right? Like, oh, is that right? You know, did I say, you know, and I saw something on TV probably shortly before going to bed. And those two things merged together and became a dream, which means the dream came from the mind. That's how I know it came from the mind. Next question. Has there ever been a dream that appeared not to come from the mind? I said, yes. There was the dream that told me to go to Pueblo. Like, I mean, that didn't seem to come from the same mind that creates these other dreams. Where did that dream come from? Intuition, I would say. Have there been other intuitive dreams? Yes, there have been a few. So two types of dreams are experienced: mind projection and intuitive projection. Yes. Where do both mind and intuition come from? Both are experienced as part of the self, I. So the entire dreamscape comes from the self. Yes. Is that known when you experience yourself within the dream? No. It is known upon awakening. How does one awaken from the dream? It happens spontaneously. Does the world share characteristics with the dream? And the answer is yes. And this is based on that last quote that we just looked at, where I talked about how neither one have consistent rules, et cetera. And again, I discussed that in the weekly gathering, but I could see that the dream and what we call the world share characteristics. Is it possible then that world experiences are made up of mind projection and intuitive projection, just like nighttime dreams? The answer is yes. Have both been experienced? Yes, I've experienced both. Beliefs have been seen to be just beliefs, and when they were released, their appearance vanished. So that's how I know that some of it was, like I used to believe in the I am bad thought, I used to believe in rejection, I used to believe in betrayal, I used to see these things in the world because I believed in them. But once I released those beliefs, for me, those things disappeared from the world. So they were a projection of my thoughts about I am bad, my thoughts about rejection, my thoughts about betrayal, etc. So I know that thoughts project into the world. Also, there have been experiences like this writing that I'm doing right now, in a Ramana, of course, NTI. These things seem to be the projection of intuitive knowing. So I'm saying that I have experienced both in a nighttime dream, and I've experienced both in what we call wakefulness, you know, being awake in the daytime. So is this also showing that the characteristics of the dream and the world are the same? And I said, yes, this is a clear indication. So again, this is just another inquiry that my inner self led me through to show me that there's, I can find just the crazy mind in the dream, or I can find intuitive guidance in a dream sometimes. I can also, you know, so we called it mind projection or intuitive projection, but I can also find mind projection and intuitive projection in the world. So can I be certain then that the world is not a dream? And the answer, of course, is no, I can't be, because I find the same projection phenomena in both. I'll pause and see if anyone has anything they want to say about that before continuing. And again, remember, I can't see, now I only see Jay and Ron. So please just speak up. All right, then I will move on. Let's see, we are on 441. So the next one I wanted to go to is 443. And of course, the reason I'm showing this to y'all, I'm sure you know, is just to demonstrate what investigation or inquiry can look like. You'll do your own investigation, your own inquiry, but I just want to provide examples of what it might look like. So quote 443 says, "Creation has not taken place. It is but an appearance, like the mirage." So first of all, my inner guidance asked me, by the way, this all seems to have happened, a lot of this seems to have happened on the same day. That was a long day of sitting here and talking to inner guidance. Is there, oh no, this was May 12, while ago we were looking at May 10, but it's all within the same few days. Is there reasonable logic to this flow of questioning? So this is an interesting question that my inner guidance asked me, like, do I perceive this inquiry as reasonable? And I said, yes, it is reasonable. Inner guidance said, the questioning may continue then. And I said, yes. So then the inner guidance said, in a nighttime dream, was a world created? And I said, no, a world appeared, but it was not created. Inner guidance said, why is this said? I answered, because the things that appeared to exist did not exist. If something seemed to happen, it did not happen. And if you listen to the weekly gathering on Sunday, you heard me talk about the dream, about the burglar who broke into my house and I broke his jaw. And then I woke up and realized there was no burglar. I didn't break anyone's jaw, right? What appeared to be there was not there. What seemed to happen did not happen. So there's nothing created in a dream, right? It is literally like a mirage. It's a mere appearance. Inner guidance says, it has been said that the world shares characteristics with the dream, meaning this is something that I saw. And I said, yes, it has been seen. Oh, yeah, it has been seen. Yes, it has been seen that the world shares many characteristics with the dream. In fact, the scene that occurs with questioning sees that the body world experience cannot be clearly distinguished from a dream. Like, this is where it took me. I cannot say for sure the world is not a dream based on everything I've looked at with this inner questioning. The questioning goes on. If both world and dream are the same matter, which is projection, is there creation present in the world? And the answer would have to be no. Now, there's an if statement here. If both the world and the dream are projection. And remember, we just looked at a contemplation where I admitted that I had experienced mind projection in the world. Like, I used to believe in betrayal. Now I don't see betrayal anywhere. I used to believe in rejection. Now I don't see rejection anywhere. I used to believe in unworthiness and guilt. Now I don't see unworthiness and guilt anywhere. So I know those things are mind projections. I've also experienced intuitive projection, like inner Ramana, right? So I know that there's projection here. And if it's the same kind of projection that's in a nighttime dream, it can't be any more created than a nighttime dream. You see how this logic is leading me? And if both world and dream are the same matter, which is projection, is there creation present in the world? The answer is no. Neither the projection of mind or intuition could be called creation if the characteristics are the same as the dream. each would have to be called appearance. Now the question says, there is holding back here, which means I was experiencing resistance to this. And I said, yes. What is the cause of the holding back? In spite of the clear seeing, when this reasonable logic is followed, there is some unwillingness to state fully that the world is an appearance like a dream. Is there total unwillingness? No, there isn't total unwillingness, because the seeing is occurring and cannot be denied. It must be investigated further. And then inner guidance asks, so the questioning may continue. And I said, yes, I give questioning permission to continue at a pace that is perfect for additional seeing and opening up. In other words, I'm saying, don't take me too fast. Right? Don't take me too fast. You know how fast I can take this stuff. This is a statement that willingness is greater than unwillingness. Thank you. And that's the end of that particular contemplation. But again, you know, it's taken me through several questionings, Hal, where I admitted a nighttime dream is projection. And yes, I know for a fact I've experienced the world as projection. And then it asked me, well, is a nighttime dream a creation or is that just an appearance? I'm certain it's just an appearance. Then why do you say the world is a creation? It's actually not logical. You know, if Spock was here, he would have to say, following this line of logic, the world must just be an appearance. But as you can tell, I had resistance to that, and many of us have resistance to that. We don't want to say that the world is just an appearance, even when presented with this incredible logic. I'll pause and see if anybody has anything to say before I go on to my next one. Jay?
No, I was just giving the Vulcan hand sign. That's all.
Oh, the Vulcan hand. All right, then. So I will move on to 445. By the way, notice I did get some little, breaks in between. Notice we're not going bam, 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 bam. You know, inner guidance knew that I needed some just casual, normal contemplations here instead of this intense questioning. So 445 says, all these worlds, etc., come into being and cease to be as notions and nothing more. Consciousness does not undergo any change in all these. In consciousness, there is no experience of pleasure or pain, nor does a notion arise in it as this I am. So the questioning begins here. Just asks me, what is known? And I said, existence is here, it is present, it is, it never changes, it is always present without change, even as the world and body experience flux and change enormously. Now this continues. What is the cause of local experience of I am this person or I see from this body mind? This was the next question I was asked. If all that's here is existence, which is what I answered in the previous question, why do I say I'm this? I answered, attachment to this as what I am is the cause of local experience. Inner guidance says, look at what is known. Is I am this a part of what is known? And I said, no, it is not a part of what is known. And if we just go back again, when I was simply asked what is known, I said, existence is here, it is present, it is, it never changes, it is always present without change, even as the world and body experience flux and change enormously. Notice when asked what is known, I did not answer, it's known that I am this. Right? And so now that's being gently thrown back in my face. Look at what is known. Is I am this a part of what is known? And since I had just answered the question, I had to say no. It is not a part of what is known. Because when he asked on the previous page, when he asked, I say he sometimes for my inner guidance, because I've had like inner Ramanas and, male figures. So when he asked, what is known, I closed my eyes and went within what is known, and I answered with what I saw. And it didn't come that it's known that I'm this person or that I'm this body. So, and that led up to this, but now I have to say, no, it is not a part of what is known. When I just contemplated the question, what is known, I didn't come up with that answer. It's not like I avoided it. It didn't appear in answer to the question. So inner guidance says, stay fixed on what is known. Do not be swayed from knowledge. Any comments on that one before I go on to the next inquiry? Okay, I'm going to go to 449 next. So 449 says, if you close your eyes, the vision of the external world is blotted out. If you remove the notion of the world from your consciousness, pure consciousness alone exists. So inner guidance asks me, what is the world? And I said, I don't know. I can't answer that question. Not after everything we've been through looking at, right? And inner guidance responds, whenever an answer or a definition does arise, question certainty regarding that thought. If certainty is not questioned, assumed certainty may be present. If certainty is questioned, it will be seen there is no certainty. So inner guidance is telling me how to go forward. As soon as I'm sure about something in the world, I'm to question it. Now, if we compare that to an earlier contemplation that I took you through, I was able to see that existence and beingness was known, but I was able to see that everything in the world was not known like beingness is known, that it's observed and therefore interpreted, which means it's not certainty. It's, you could call it only my opinion, right? Somebody else may feel differently about this pillow. I may say, oh, the pillow is silky soft. And somebody else may say, no, it's not. It has all these bumps on it, right? When I was paying attention to what was underneath and they're paying, we pay attention to things differently, right? So whenever I feel like I'm certain about anything in the world, inner guidance is asking me to question that. Because if I don't question it, then I may just continue to assume I'm certain, continue to assume I'm right. But if I compare it to the certainty of beingness, I may realize that's an interpretation. I may even remember that's what I'm seeing, which is really in the brain and not out there anyway, based on what science tells me. So this is very good advice that has come up through inner guidance, that whenever an answer whenever I think I know what the world is, question my certainty. This is the kind of questioning that Byron Katie recommends. How do I know that's true? Am I absolutely certain that's true? This is the same kind of questioning that Michael Langford says was spontaneously born in him when he was like in elementary school. They'd start learning things or kids would say things and everybody else was just believing everything that was happening. And he would ask, I don't remember his exact question, but basically the question was, how do I know if this is true? How do I know this is true? So he began to question his certainty in elementary school. And he says, as a result, he did not develop many beliefs that most people have developed and therefore they need to be undone. Before I move on, any comments on 449? Okay, it looks like what I want to do next is not look at my journal. I just want to look at quote 450. It says, the world and the I exist only as notions, not as fact nor as reality. And I think what I would like to do with 450 is just ask you guys over the next week, if you could just, this one little quote, if you could kind of just write this one down maybe and carry it around with you and try practicing inquiry on this and see what happens. Like it says, the world and the I exist as notions, not as fact nor as reality. Can you see that within yourself if you were to spend a week with this particular quote? Can you see that the world is a notion? You know, what arises in you? Can you see that the I is a notion? Can you see that they're not facts? Can you see that they're not reality? And don't make anything up. You know, don't just try and fit into this box. But see what arises as you contemplate just that one quote for a whole week. And next week, I'll see what y'all came up with. I think the last thing I wanted to look at was RDA journal. Oh, yes. Go ahead.
It's Nancy. I have a question about 450 and contemplating it for the week. Are you saying that you want us to write every day for that one specific quote or just?
I'm going to leave that up to you how you contemplate it. So I know we're still going to be contemplating daily stuff, but in addition, if you could just have this one all week, you know, some people might contemplate it while taking a walk. But if some kind of clarity comes, I would recommend, you know, jotting it down because the mind will try and blot out the clarity.
Okay.
You know, so in that way, just for the sake of remembering, I would recommend writing it down, but just try for a week, you know, you might even say a prayer. You know, I've often said prayers when I really wanted to see something. So you could say a prayer, you know, something like, please lead me through a reasonable inquiry that will help me to see if the I is real or if the I is a notion.
Okay.
If the world is real or if the world is a notion. And don't assume that the quote is telling the truth. Right? Like if you assume the quote is telling the truth, you won't go into a genuine inquiry. There has to be the possibility that this quote is just crap, right? In order to go into a genuine inquiry, you have to find out for yourself. And let's see what people come up with.
Okay.
So the next thing I wanted to look at was 452, and this is the last thing that I have. Oh, yes. we had another quote that was similar to this week. Oh, no, this is it. Many of you, or at least a few of you, commented on this. The quote 452 is, "The illusory appearance of objects is of no practical use." Right? And a few of you commented like, well, I don't know. It seems practical. And in fact, I hope, Ron, you don't mind me sharing because you said something really funny. You said something about a chair seems to have a practical use. I'm sitting in one now. You know, but what I want to do is I want to show you where inner guidance took me to inquire into this. You know, the illusory appearance of objects is of no practical use. That is a pretty far out quote, right? Because a chair does seem quite practical. These computers seem quite practical. These headsets seem quite practical, right? So here's what inner guidance did. It asked me this question. Look at the question it asked. Inner guidance is so smart. What purpose does the world have to the self? Now, first of all, when I'm saying the chair is practical, I'm talking about to the body. Ah, you see? So notice how the first question asked turns the quote upside down from where we were all thinking. What purpose does the world have to the self? Inner guidance asks me. I said, I can see the purposes given to the world by the person body mind. The world has a purpose of making me feel safe. For example, a house, a roof over your head is quite practical in that matter. The world has a purpose of making me feel like I am a part of something, even awakening together, right? We feel like we were doing this with other people, belonging, connection, appreciation. The world has a purpose of bringing me joy. Like today, I went on a lovely walk here, was looking at the mountains. I loved it. A sense of satisfaction and fulfillment. However, I see these purposes are not necessary to the self, since the self does not have a sense of lack. In other words, in order for a house to be practical in making me feel safe, there has to be a sense of unsafe. In order for the world, like awakening together, to have a practical purpose of making me feel like I belong, there has to be an inherent feeling that I don't belong or I don't have connection. In order for the world to have a practical purpose of making me happy, there has to be a sense that in my own self I'm not happy. So sure, the world is practical to the false self with all of these false beliefs. But it is not practical to the self, which of course is where the master is speaking from when he says the illusory appearance of objects is of no practical use. He's not talking about to the person, he's talking about to the self. So again, I said, however, I see these purposes are not necessary to the self, since the self does not have a sense of lack. And our guidance says, so what purpose does the world have to the self? I looked at that and I said, without first envisioning a sense of lack, I cannot find a purpose for the world. I must answer that the world cannot have purpose to the self, which means the quote is telling the damn truth. It has no practical use. Imagine that. And I did make a note here. I said, it is noted that there is a sense of sadness about this, which indicates attachment to the world and wanting it to have a meaningful purpose. I saw the logic that I was being led through by inner guidance, but the person by that body still wanted it to have, I wanted to be able to say, oh, I'm just, you know, using it practically. I still wanted to be me, I guess is what you could say. So that's the last thing that I had to share today. Are there any comments on that?
Just that the self continues to exist without the arising of the world.
Yeah. So how could it have any practical use to the self?
Right.
Yeah, and Don has asked
her hand up.
Okay, well, first let me answer Don, and then I'll go to Tony. Don, I see you wrote, what about the purpose to help us awaken? I would say that is a good bridge purpose. But again, that's not a purpose to the self because it is awake. It's still a purpose to the body, mind, personality, right? So every purpose we find relates to the body, mind, personality, not to the self. Go ahead, Tony.
That was exactly what I was going to ask or say. Is the same.
Okay, yeah. So to the self, the world is of no practical use. Yeah. So I guess that's really all that I have to share, unless you guys have something to say. Yeah, Ron says level of confusion. So keep it up. I know that, again, I've heard a few comments about how repetitive these quotes are, and at least one of our friends here is not as inspired by these quotes as maybe by some previous things. But these quotes do serve a purpose, and it won't be too long at all till we'll be moving on to step three, which is going to be completely different. So hang in there. I'm absolutely certain that you'll be glad that you did. All right. Thank you, everyone. Bye.